You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our latest Monday episode, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Hope everybody had a great weekend. Glad to have you listening in. Jam-packed episode coming your way. As always, it's Mock Draft Monday. We're going to be reading through several listener submissions, and this week it is an all-offensive line-oriented draft. If you saw what the Cardinals did today, you can maybe understand why we decided to go that route, but I digress. Let's get on to our lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Rob, the Seahawks have yet to announce their official 2021 coaching staff. We know Shane Waldron's going to be the new offensive coordinator. We know that Andy Dickerson's going to be coming with him from Los Angeles. He's the new run game coordinator. But apparently it's not going to stop there as far as new coaching staff additions for the Seahawks. There are several familiar names here that are going to be on Seattle staff this year, starting with Deshaun Shedd, longtime corner and safety for the Seahawks, was on their Super Bowl teams in 2013 and 2014. Versatile player that was a key special teams guy, evolved into a starter across Richard Sherman in 2016, had a really strong season as a starter, and then unfortunately blew out his knee in the playoffs that year and was never the same player after that. But had a really solid career for an undrafted player out of Portland State. And if you ever followed Deshaun Shedd closely, it shouldn't be surprising that he is now going to be taking his talents to the coaching staff. This is a guy with a very high football IQ that should serve this staff well and has a chance to be a rising star in the coaching spectrum.
Yeah, I agree with you, Corbin. I mean, as you talked about, this is a guy who had to, kind of fight his way into the NFL, undrafted free agent out of Portland State, had played some corner and safety. So he's not only a cerebral player in terms of just his ability to articulate ideas and points, but also because of the positional versatility that he showed throughout his career. And so I think that that's really going to help from a coaching perspective. And then the fact that he was successful in Seattle, had the year when he was at the Detroit Lions as well. So he has played in a couple of different schemes, or surrounded by different talent. And then this ties in with what Pete Carroll has done in the past, in that he often has had former players of his or of others who wind up coming back to be coaches. I mean, obviously his defensive coordinator at this point, Ken Norton Jr., being the former Pro Bowl linebacker that he was, but we've also seen guys like Lo Fitzatupu or Aaron Curry, Steve Hutchinson, the Hall of Fame offensive lineman, has helped in with Seattle scouting a little bit at times. The former Pro Bowl linebacker Dan Morgan, speaking of another guy who was in Seattle scouting department as well. So again, I think that this is kind of the style that Pete Carroll has preached for a long time now, of going back to the well of former players, because who but a former player is really going to be able to get into the head of the current players quite as well. So I think that makes some sense. But, you know, there's a couple of other coaches that are going to be joining Deshaun's show with the Seahawks. And so to me, one of the most intriguing additions is another old name in Carl Tater Smith.
Yeah, it's interesting that they're bringing him back, because he was on the staff from 2011 to 2018. 7 of those years, he was the quarterback coach. And then the final year that he was with the team, he was the assistant head coach to Pete Carroll, and then he went to the Texans the last 2 years. He was a quarterback coach, and this past year an offensive consultant. And Pete Carroll has mentioned this recently. He was talking about people that hold him accountable, and he mentioned Carl Tater Smith as one of the guys that would put him in his place. And it's interesting we're bringing this up, because all the sources I've talked to said that this was already in the works before Russell Wilson came out publicly talking about the pass protection and not having enough involvement in personnel decisions, not going deep enough in the playoffs, all the things that have led to the trade speculation. This was brewing before then. Smith has been in the works since early January, coming back to Seattle, from what I've been told. But there's been all these different stories about Pete Carroll not having somebody that can put him in his place and not having somebody that can control his power, because you have Jody Allen now as the owner, replacing her late brother, Paul Allen. And so Paul Allen's not there anymore to keep him in check. And so maybe this is an attempt by Pete Carroll to Make sure he has somebody there he respects that if he's not doing what he's supposed to or not handling things the right way, you got a quarterback that's been frustrated. Now I've got an assistant coach that is older than me, 72 years old, that can put me in my place if I'm not doing things the way I should or I'm not thinking things over the way that I should. I've got somebody that can kind of put me on notice a little bit in Carl Smith.
Yeah, and I think it's just a respect thing. I think that, you know, because Pete Carroll and Carl Smith have worked together for as long as they have, you know, not only in Seattle, but previously in New England and spent a year together at USC as well. I think that familiar with each other is just going to help that relationship that much more. He kind of talked about how there has been some talk about whether Pete Carroll is kind of running with, you know, unchecked in Seattle. And I personally don't think that is necessarily the case. I think that everything that we've ever seen about the relationship between Pete Carroll and John Schneider, as well as the Adam family, the Allen family with Paul Allen and Jody Allen, of course, since has all shown that there is a really strong leadership base with the Seahawks. But I think it's not just about the idea of Pete Carroll running amok in Seattle, but also just making sure that there is another person that's trusted between Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson. There's been so much talk that there also has been a bit of a rift between your star head coach and your star quarterback. You know, Carl Smith has been somebody that Russell Wilson has publicly and privately kind of acknowledged has played a huge role in his personal success. When Carl Smith wound up signing with the Houston Texans as their quarterback coach, as you mentioned, he went to Houston where Deshaun Watson's numbers just continue to improve. So this isn't the case of a coach who is the game has passed him by, as some have suggested might be the case with Pete Carroll. If anything, Carl Smith has continued to be very, very successful. And then again, with Russell Wilson having a strong relationship with Carl Smith already, then hopefully that can just make the relationship, if there is any issue between Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson right now, hopefully that can kind of grease those wheels a little bit better from a Seahawks perspective as well. And it's not just Carl Smith. He's bringing in his son, Tracy Smith as well, who this isn't just one of those things of you're the coach's son kind of a thing. Tracy Smith was with Seattle for a cup of coffee a couple of years ago and has bounced around a couple of different teams since, usually working in the special teams. And so given the fact that Seattle moved on past Brian Schneider a year ago, Larry Izzo did a fantastic job jumping in as Seattle's primary special teams coach this past season, but he still could use some help there too. So by getting both the Smith father and son combination coming into Seattle as well, then I think that this is the type of turnover that you actually would kind of welcome from the coaching staff, because on the one hand, you're getting kind of the old in the tooth Carl Smith, who again already has some familiarity with the Seahawks squad, but then you're also bringing in the younger version as well, who might be able to bring some of that youthful enthusiasm that sometimes this club has been lacking a little bit as well.
It remains unclear what the positions are going to be for Carl and Tracy Smith necessarily, but I would anticipate that Carl Smith has a chance to take over as the senior offensive assistant, which Sanjay Lal was last season. Lal just became the new receivers coach with Jacksonville. That wasn't a surprise because I think he came to Seattle because of his relationship with Brian Schottenheimer. So Schottenheimer going to Jacksonville, Lal ends up following him over there as the receivers coach. So I think that's probably the role that Smith plays. And his first stint in Seattle, he was a big part of their time management and game management stuff. So I expect him to kind of be the eyes in the sky, so to speak, for the Seahawks and Pete Carroll playing that role once again in 2021. Tracy will probably be the special teams assistant behind Larry Izzo, as you said. Could use some help there with Brian Schneider now being in Jacksonville. I keep bringing up the Jaguars. It's been the destination for former Seahawks coaches this offseason. Daryl Bevel is the offensive coordinator there as well. So I would anticipate all three of those guys. Deshaun Shedd is going to be playing a role in the defensive backfield, working with corners and safeties. Who better to coach those guys up than somebody that came into the league as an undrafted player and from scratch had to learn all the techniques that Pete Carroll deploys over there, the step kick and stuff. So I think it's a really nice hire. Again, a guy I think is going to have a bright future as a coach. And, of course, they know what to expect from Carl Smith and Tracy Smith being on the staff before. So three solid hires to an already very solid Seahawks coaching staff. When we come back in the second quarter, it's Mock Draft Monday. Rob and I are going to be dissecting three different listener submissions. It's all about the offensive line, and you only had four picks to address the front line this week. So we'll get to that when we return. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 delicious flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of my favorites, cookies and cream, carrot cake, German chocolate, peanut butter, salted caramel, coconut, peanut butter brownie, you name it, they all are delicious. All of the bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew, and it's good for the health conscious guy. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber, in my case, gluten-free. It's great for a keto diet as well. Visit BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your first order. Again, the promo code LOCKEDON at BuiltBar.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. So in case you were sleeping under a rock today, there was a major move in the NFC West. This was a bit of a surprise for some people. For me, it was not at all because we already saw DeAndre Hopkins was trying to recruit J.J. Watt to Arizona, another former Texan that was so happy to change zip codes and go to the desert. Now J.J. Watt is officially joining him with the Cardinals, and now he's going to team up with Chandler Jones, another vicious pass rusher coming to the NFC West. Now you really can understand why Russell Wilson's been talking about the pass protection issues, because you think about all the talent that's in this division and the fact the Seahawks have not really made a lot of big investments on the offensive line over the years. They put a lot of Band-Aids up front, just trying to make the group suitable enough they could win games and move the football. That's not going to cut it anymore with players like J.J. Watt coming to the NFC West, already with all the other talented rushers. And so, Rob, the main emphasis of our Mock Draft Monday this week is all about the offensive line, and you only could use your four native picks. No trade downs, no trade ups or anything like that. You pick at the four spots the Seahawks are slated, and you could only draft offensive linemen. So this is all about protecting Russell Wilson and getting that run game going. And we got some really good mock drafts where a lot of our listeners were able to find good value with those day three selections that the Seahawks have.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I mean, it's almost like, whereas Pete Carroll and John Schneider may kind of struggle with the idea of Russell Wilson coming in and being able to kind of, make the selections, it certainly looks like our general managers here allowed Russell Wilson to make their selections, because, as you said, all four of the picks for all these mock drafts are all going to be focusing on the offensive line. And oftentimes when you see things like that, you would think that there would be a lot of reaches, but I didn't think that was the case at all. I think that we have some quality offensive linemen that are selected in appropriate spots. I've been a little bit critical of mostly about the scouting services that provide these mock drafts, that they've had some of these offensive linemen that are available in the sixth round that are likely going to be top 100 selections. The selections that I saw here, I think that they pretty much tie in line with about where you can expect these players to go. And it's going to be fascinating to see if this is not the exact strategy that Seattle winds up following, Corbin, because you're right. When the division is as gifted as it already is among pass rushers, and then you add a difference maker like a J.J. Watt to the rotation, then yeah, I think that the Seahawks might be looking at some of the drafts that we're about to highlight here and think, yeah, that makes some sense. And I think there's a lot of Seahawks fans, and Russell Wilson being one of them, that thought if Seattle does stick with four selections and they use all of them on blockers, I think there'd be a lot of Seahawks fans out there who'd be pretty excited about that.
Let's look at our first one here coming from Stone Rochelle, who used the Pro Football Focus mock draft simulator. And we've had some issues with PFF simulator because they have several players that ended up going back to school on there. But we don't have any of those on this particular draft. At 56, Stone picked Alex Leatherwood, the tackle out of Alabama. Then at pick 129, Drake Jackson, center out of Kentucky. 168, Za'Darius Hutcherson, the guard out of South Carolina, and Michael Mene out of Penn State at pick 209, big center. that played for the Nittany Lions. So a lot of notable players here, a lot of experienced players, guys that played a lot of big-time football in Power 5 conferences over the last several years. Leatherwood is a player that's been a very popular pick among mock drafts. I've seen him on a lot of Seattle's mock drafts from fans, and it's understandable because we're talking about another really big mountain of a guy at tackle. But I think that might be one of the issues that I have with picking him at this juncture of the draft. I don't know how you feel about this, Rob, but I see some similarities, probably a more developed player coming into the NFL, but I see some similarities in the way he's built and his skill set to that of Jermaine Ifedi, who ended up being with the Seahawks for 4 years. And a lot of fans were happy once he left because of the penalty issues and stuff that he had. But he looks to me like a guy that might be better suited to play guard in the NFL. If you put him at tackle, you might have yourself another Jermaine Ifedi that has his share of issues in pass protection against more athletic edge rushers.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, that's the thing with that. My issues with Jermaine Ifedi and my issues with, Alex Leatherwood are very similar in that you can find games where they look like superstars at tackle. Then you find other games where they look terrible and you think, I'm not sure this guy's going to be able to slot in and be successful at guard either. Leatherwood, for all of his hype, he was the SEC Jacobs Blocking Award winner. He's All-American basically since he step foot on campus at Alabama, has been their starting left tackle throughout this time. There's a lot of things that are exciting about him. You see flashes of the foot speed that you need to be able to be a left tackle in the NFL. And then you see other snaps where he is very late off the ball, a la Jermaine Ifedi. And so I think that that's important. And then at 6'6", 315 pounds with the long arms that he has and everything, he is not the physical dominator that Jermaine Ifedi could be at times. And so that would be one of my biggest questions about him is with Alex Leatherwood. I mean, he's got a name that sounds like it should be like Tom Brady's cologne or something. I mean, it's like one of the great names, in football. But at the same time, he doesn't play with that same type of grit and nastiness that his name and that the Alabama reputation might suggest. And that is the one thing that we have seen pretty consistently from Seattle is when then they have gambled an offensive lineman and lost, it's usually still been a very physical player, and it's Leatherwood's lack of consistent physicality that to me is one of the biggest concerns about him. But at the same time, the talent and the size and experience is all there. So if he was available at number 56 overall for a guy who I thought had a chance to be a first round selection, then I think he still would make some sense because he does give you some positional versatility. He does have the size and experience to be able to play on either side for you.
That's where 129, this next pick, if the Seahawks are going to be running more of a wide zone stretch style run game, if that's their bread and butter, then I think Drake Jackson would be a very intriguing player for the Seahawks to look at. Because one thing that I really love watching his game, watching him on tape, he doesn't have the great size. He's around 290 pounds. He's not Joey Hunt small necessarily, but I mean, he's not a big bruiser. He plays stronger than that though. What really excites me about him, though, is his mobility, his lateral quickness, and his ability to reach defenders. And I think you put him in an offensive scheme like what the Rams operate that has a lot of that wide zone, your stretch principles. I think his lateral quickness and mobility is going to make him a major asset. I think it would be a great scheme fit for him. And so if it was the 2019 and 2020 Seahawks, I'm probably not drafting him because I don't see him being a mauler. But in a system where they're doing more of the outside zone-oriented stuff, I absolutely think it would be a great system fit.
Oh, I do too. To me, there are two centers in this class that whose just initial quickness, their lateral agility, as you said, I think really fits in with that zone scheme that the Rams have used. And it will be interesting to see if the Seahawks adopt that as well. Drake Jackson from Kentucky being my favorite of the two. Drew Dahlman, a similarly built player out of Stanford, who I think might be available on day three of this draft class. I think that he's another one who kind of fits in just because of that mobility. So yeah, I agree. Drake Jackson's one of my favorite centers in this draft class. And again, I think that he is being selected at number 129 overall at a spot that makes some sense. And I would argue is actually the best selection of Stone Rochelle's mock draft here.
And I'm going to make an argument for value. I'm going to go all in on this kid at 168. Sadarius Hutcherson is a player that when I've watched him at South Carolina, he's one of those balls of clay. He has played a lot. He has started a lot of games, but I look at his frame around 320 pounds. He's played some tackle. I think he's a guard at the next level. And again, a lot of this is scheme centric, but this is a player that will absolutely rock you. There have been a number of times on film where when he's gotten his hands on defenders, he just takes them for a ride. And we're talking the SEC. So he's playing against top level college competition. We know some of the big time talents on the defensive lines in that conference, and he's held his own. His big issue has been technical stuff. And so I look at him as a player at this stage of the draft. You're getting him at 168. I look at him as a player that, if he's coached up, could be a player that has the talent to be a first couple round caliber player, but he may be available on day three because he's raw still. This is still a guy that's got to be molded, but I look at the size. I think he's a good enough athlete even for the scheme change potentially. I see a lot to like here. He's just he's a player that's going to have the right coaches that can get their hands on him and really help him reach his potential. I like him in Seattle's scheme.
I like him in Seattle's current scheme, and that's going to be the question, kind of like we were just talking about with Drake Jackson here. Why I did in my little scouting report on Hutcherson, I actually compared him to Chance Warmack just because I see kind of a short, squatty body as a guy who has played a lot of right guard, and left tackle, roughly a dozen starts at all three of those positions. And you talk about the power. I mean, this is a guy who reportedly has a 500-plus pound bench press, who's expected to put up, possibly 40 repetitions, in the bench. So you see the raw power. I think that he struggles a little bit in terms of the quickness, the quick pass rushers. And to me, I always look at who are you going to be facing, considering some of the interior defensive linemen like an Aaron Donald, like a Javon Kinlaw, and guys like that in this division now. I think you have to be a little concerned about that. But still, at that range in the draft, yeah, I think it makes all the sense in the world.
And another center at 209, Michael Manet. I'm going to be honest. I mean, I could see them double dipping at center, guys that can play the position, because right now they only have one center that would be under contract, and that's Kyle Fuller, and he is a restricted free agent. And so they're going to have to figure out what to do on that front. Ethan Posick is going to hit the free agent market. And so I could see him picking two linemen that have the ability to play the center position, because there just isn't much depth there right now. They've got one start from Damian Lewis there. Manet's a player that at 306 pounds, he's a little bigger than what Drake Jackson is, about 15 pounds heavier. But you watch the tape and you would think Jackson is the more physical player consistently. And Manet's just a player that I think he's rock solid. I don't see the upside necessarily in his game, though. I don't know that he's a guy that can ever have a ceiling as a long-term starter. And obviously late in the draft like this, you're going to have a tough time finding players of that caliber anyway. But as far as being a swing player that can play center, that can play guard, at pick 209, there's still good value there.
There is. And again, the positional versatility, I like his size more at that guard position. I don't think that he's quite as quick as I would like at center. So if you're going to kind of double dip, I mentioned that Drew Dahlman from Stanford is another guy that, that I'm pretty high on and think that he is likely to also be available late. But again, we're talking about late sixth round selections. Then you're just looking for guys who might be able to make the squad. And because of the positional versatility and the starting experience, I think that he would make some sense as well.
Let's look at our next draft, and this one's coming from Robert Green. And there's a few guys here I've got to wonder about where they fit at schematically. But again, that's the big question here, Rob. We just don't know what to expect, how much of this offense is going to change towards what the Rams do, how much can be retained from the previous playbook. We just don't know at this point. And so it's kind of a crapshoot knowing which type of players they're going to be looking for in the draft. But there are some really talented players here at 56. Liam Eichenberg out of Notre Dame. He's got your typical NFL tackle build, 6'6", 305 pounds. This is a guy that is capable of blowing people up at the line of scrimmage and winning with power. My biggest question for him, I don't see a great deal of athleticism. He compensates for it because he's very technically refined. Coming from Notre Dame, they know how to coach up their linemen. But if the Seahawks are going to be running more of that outside zone-based look, I got to wonder if he's got the athleticism, the agility, the mobility, at the tackle spots to be able to play in that type of scheme rather than, say, a man or gap exchange system, a power system, where he's going to be able to maul people.
It's a really good point. You know, and that's one of the reasons why I think that there's a chance that he is available here at number 56 overall. You know, he's kind of the exact opposite of Alex Leatherwood, who we're talking about before. With Leatherwood, the highs are so high and the lows are so low that he is just one of those guys who's just infuriating as an NFL prospect. Eichenberg, on the other hand, is just about as steady as it gets for the most part. He did, because Notre Dame faced the level of talent that they did. I mean, week in and week out, he was going up against some of the absolute best pass rushers in all of college football over the last 4 years. I mentioned the 4 years because that's how long Eichenberg has been a starter for Notre Dame. And you kind of go back over the offensive linemen that have come out of the Irish over the last several years, and there's just been so many really quality offensive linemen that have gone on to the NFL and immediately been NFL stars. Eichenberg is one of my favorite offensive linemen in this draft class because I feel like you just know what you're getting with him. And so if he was available to Seattle at 56 overall, I definitely would be a big fan of adding him to Seattle's roster. But at the same time, I would argue that tackle is your most set offensive line position at this point. So again, I think if you're looking for that immediate bang for your buck, the Eichenberg can provide for a team being the four-year starter that he is. I just don't know that he makes sense for the Seahawks considering what you already have in two very established starters in Brown and Shell. But at the same time, again, a big, big fan of him. Switching quickly to Trey Hill, I talked about before the two centers who I feel like very well or very nicely fit into a possible zone scheme where you're going to be needing more lateral agility would be Drake Jackson from Kentucky, Drew Dahlman from Stanford. If Seattle, on the other hand, is going to continue to be the downhill just power scheme that they have been throughout much of Mike Solari's time here and much of Pete Carroll's time here with the Seahawks, and Trey Hill from Georgia absolutely fits the bill. This is a big, powerful, mauling type of a guy who I think that, again, is drafted about where he should go at pick 129 overall, probably lower than he should still be on the board. I think he's ultimately going to outplay that. But at the same time, we know how interior linemen go, especially underclassmen. And so I think that he does have a possibility of being here number 129 overall.
And I want to look at the last two picks in this draft because this was a tackle-heavy draft by Robert Green. And you look long-term, it makes sense because Brandon Shell only has 1 year left in his deal. Dwayne Brown's going to be 36 in August. So the nice thing is you got a couple players here that potentially could play in the inside if you wanted to move them. Western Michigan, what an interesting school to suddenly have a pretty nice little pipeline going as far as offensive linemen. We saw Taylor Moton a few years ago get drafted early out of Western Michigan by the Panthers. Now he's likely going to get the franchise tag because he had a fantastic 2020 season and has really developed into a quality NFL tackle. Maybe the next guy in line, not going to get drafted as high. He's more of an unpolished product coming into the NFL. But Jalen Moore is a player that when you look at the athletic traits, this is a guy if the Seahawks want to add a tackle in day three and they're leaning more towards an outside zone, stretch run oriented offense, I think Moore makes a lot of sense as a player that you can bring in and develop behind Dwayne Brown. I don't see him as somebody that's going to come in and be ready to play snaps right away, but you get a year under his belt to develop. He could be a guy that could play left tackle when Dwayne Brown is ready to move on. He could be the heir apparent and excel in this scheme. And you see enough glimpses of him winning with power to think he gets stronger, that he might be a well-rounded tackle prospect down the line.
He could, and that's one of the things I like about him is, again, the positional versatility. You know, there's some guys who are they're just tackles, as if that's a bad thing, saying that they're just tackles, but that they don't have the girth. They don't have the initial quickness. They don't have that just raw explosiveness to really be able to transition inside to be able to play guard. I think that Moore has that. I think that he can play guard. I think he can slide outside and play tackle while you develop him. And so to me, he is a really intriguing selection for the Seahawks, as is Tommy O'Doyle. This is the guy that a lot of people are kind of sleeping on a little bit because he played at Miami of Ohio. And while the Red Hawks decided to play this season with all of the, you know, COVID and everything, Tommy O'Doyle did not. He opted out on the year. Now, this was an all-MAC selection, one of their best players who decided to opt out on the year. And so it's going to be fascinating to see where NFL teams place him and other players who decided to opt out on the season. But this is a guy who has legitimate tackle height, 6'7", 6'8", 315 pounds. He is kind of one of those heavy-legged waistbender kind of types. He does not have that great lateral agility, but he's surprisingly quick off the ball. He is so long, and it's going to be interesting, again, to see how Seattle's offensive approach changes a little bit. I actually compared him to David Edwards, who was a former tackle at Wisconsin, that wound up playing some guard for those Los Angeles Rams, over the last couple of years. And so I wonder if the former Rams coaches now on Seattle staff are going to see this guy similarly and might view him as a guy that might be able to surprise the next level.
Really quick, we have one last one coming from Cold Ones here, and we've covered a couple of these prospects, but I want to dive in on one other Alabama player, plus Wisconsin. You and I love Wisconsin linemen. If the Seahawks can get one of them late in the draft, that's going to be one heck of a coup as far as I'm concerned. But pick 56, Deonte Brown out of Alabama. This is one big dude, 365 pounds. That's what they list him at. He looks bigger on the field. Did not give up a single sack for the Crimson Tide in his college career. Didn't have a great week in Mobile. There are concerns that he is a little bit too big and worries about him potentially being too big in the NFL. But this is a guy who watched the college tape. He is a better pass protector than advertised, and obviously he's a road grader. If they want the same type of guards they've had the last couple of years, him and Damian Lewis in the middle, that's a lot of beef.
It certainly is a lot of beef. And that's the thing is, you just mentioned the statistic that everybody is going to talk about with Deonte Brown, that never allowed a single sack, against SEC competition as the Crimson Tide are playing in national championship game after national championship game. I mean, he's gone against such elite competition. But at the same time, when I evaluate players, Corbin, one of the things I always look for is what I call, and I apologize for calling this, but the parasite players, the guys who kind of feed off of each other and then maybe are not quite as talented on their own rights, but they just have so much talent around them. Well, we talked a moment ago about the talented offensive tackle for Alabama, Alex Leatherwood. We've talked before about the talented Alabama center, Landon Dickerson. Well, this gentleman, Deonte Brown, was playing in between the two of them. And so because of that, he was very well protected, and he is so damn broad that it's just almost impossible for a pass rusher to be able to get past him. But, I have my struggles with trying to project him to the NFL, at least to a system that I expect to throw the ball as much as the Seahawks are going to be doing, obviously, with Russell Wilson. So I like the talent. I think that he is a much better athlete than you would think, given that bulk. But I was not at all surprised to see him struggle a little bit in the Senior Bowl. I think that actually is going to knock him down the board a little bit. And so he might be available at a point where he goes from being overrated, which I think that he was much of the last year, to actually becoming underrated. And Seattle has been willing to roll the dice on guys like that. Another player who, again, has a build a little bit like Damian Lewis, a little bit like former Seahawks Chance Wormack.
And the next two picks, pick 129 was Trey Hill, 168, Jalen Moore. We just talked about those two players in the previous draft. But pick 209, Cole Van Lannen out of Wisconsin. And I know you and I, we both love those Badgers offensive linemen. It's one of the best programs in the country at developing NFL caliber talent in the trenches. And this is another one of those big body tackles that can absolutely maul people at the point of attack. This is what I have down in my notes. He has Hercules-type strength off the edge. It's another one of those guys that can just grab onto you and just take you for a 10-yard ride off the line of scrimmage. And so, again, this is a player you got to wonder about scheme fit, because I don't know that he fits what the Seahawks may end up doing with that wide zone-oriented game. But if you're still wanting a body mover at right tackle, this is a guy that would certainly check that box off at pick 209, coming from a school that knows how to develop offensive linemen.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that some programs just churn out guys like Van Lannen here. And you said it, his power, He's a much better athlete again than you might suggest or you might think. Just looking at him on the hoof, he's quick off the ball. He gets to the second level, and then once he locks on to people, he really can move. You know, the line of scrimmage, and so I think that he fits in very well with what Seattle has done in the past. Those are the type of offensive linemen I personally think are what help you win in the NFL. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see if he is still available at that late point in his career or late point in this draft class, just because of the fact that he is considered a relatively polished prospect.
When we come back in the third quarter, we're going to be doing this throughout the week. Yes, some fans aren't necessarily going to like it, but there are still trade rumors swirling around Russell Wilson. And so we're going to travel around the country with various Locked On podcast hosts for the Russell Wilson trade tour. And we're going to kick things off with Lauren Cox of Locked On Bears. What would it look like if Russell Wilson ended up in Chicago, and what would the Bears be willing to give up to get who would clearly be the best quarterback in franchise history? We'll visit with Lauren here in a moment. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using the code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to Locked On Seahawks. This is your host, Corbin Smith, here for our Monday show. NFL analyst Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson host Locked On's Peacock and Williamson every Monday through Friday. Brian and Matt give you the national perspective all around the NFL, covering all the latest news and insight in every game, team, and move around the NFL. Get your picks, previews, and much more every weekday with the Peacock and Williamson podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Joining me, Lauren Cox of Locked On Bears, Russell Wilson. He's kind of been the big trending topic in the NFL for the last couple of weeks, since there's been persistent rumors that maybe, just maybe, he's trying to force his way out of Seattle. Now, his agent Mark Rogers told Adam Schefter of ESPN that Wilson has not demanded a trade. But interestingly, Lauren, there were four teams that were listed as potential destinations if the Seahawks decide that they wanted to trade Wilson after all. And one of them was the Bears. And you and I both know Chicago doesn't necessarily have a storied history of quarterback play. I think you and I would both agree Russell Wilson going to Chicago, he would instantly be the best quarterback they've maybe ever had in their franchise history.
Yeah, it makes the Bears feel like one of these teams, like, oh, like, we're just happy to be on the list. Like, wow, we're included in this conversation, right? Like, he wants to come here? That's incredible. Like, absolutely. They, you know, they would take him with open arms. He would be far and away franchise all-time leading quarterback in terms of talent, in terms of probably records by the time he would be done in his playing career. Absolutely. They should be trying to do anything they possibly can to try and get him to the team because of just how massive of an upgrade that would be and how rare this level of quarterback becomes available.
And Wilson always talks about his legacy. That's one of the big talking points for him when he's speaking with reporters, when he's doing national interviews. It's one of his favorite terms to bring up. You know, he always talks about wanting to be the greatest to ever play the game. And obviously Tom Brady's making that bar much, much higher for anybody else to ever touch. But certainly going to Chicago and leading the Bears back to a Super Bowl would make him a godlike figure in Chicago, I would believe. And so you mentioned that the Bears have to do whatever they can do to try to open up the discussion here and maybe get the Seahawks to at least talk about potentially making this move. If you were the Bears, what type of offer would you be making John Schneider if you were convinced that you could find a way to get him to part ways with his franchise quarterback? What do you think it would take? How far would you be willing to go to get Russell Wilson to become a Chicago Bear?
If I'm the Bears, obviously negotiation is a slightly different process here, but if we're pulling back the curtain a little bit, no player or pick is off the table for me. I'm including any, I don't say any and everyone, but pretty much anything Seattle would be interested in, I would be willing to give up. I mean, there's a line there. I'm not going to give away 10 first round picks in every player on my team, but if it's Khalil Mack and any of my recent draft picks and any, you know, defensive stars, you know, Roquan Smith, Kyle Fuller, Eddie Jackson, the rookie last year, Jalen Johnson, any of those guys, throw them in, throw pretty much anybody on the roster. I mean, this is that franchise defining of a trade, of a move. And when you have a general manager in Chicago like Ryan Pace, that everyone pretty much feels like is general managing for his job. I don't know what the verb is there. This is last offseason to try and save his job in Chicago. There's a certain stench of desperation that's lingering around this team. They didn't get too desperate to pull the trigger on, you know, they were in on Matthew Stafford, but whether or not they were actually going to get a division rivals quarterback is a different discussion. They were in on Carson Wentz, but obviously didn't want to overpay what the Colts gave up. So there's a certain level of reason here, but they're looking at every option, and Russell Wilson should be maybe second on the list behind only Deshaun Watson if he is even available. So I think any and all things should be on the table from the Bears. I guess my question is, what the Seahawks want and what are they going for? If they trade Russell Wilson, that kind of changes what my offer may be. Are they going to be a team that wants talented veteran players to try and have a quick turnaround and compete right away? Or is that a team that only would want draft picks and cheap, you know, recent picks, young guys that are still on the rookie contracts to do more of a long-term rebuild?
And I think that's where, if you and I were playing the roles of Ryan Pace as well as John Schneider, I would probably be saying, look, I like Khalil Mack. I like some of the players you've got, but your first rounder this year is 20th overall. I'm not going to be getting my franchise quarterback, my next guy, at pick 20 most likely. And I don't want Nick Foles. And so we're not going to be replacing Russell Wilson with him either. And absolutely not. And so to me, this is something that I think, you know, Bears fans listening to this are going to be upset, but this is the reality of the situation. I think of the four teams that were listed as possible destinations for Russell Wilson, I think that it is the least likely suitor in the next 2 years. Because to me, this really boils down to where Russell Wilson would be going in 2022 because of his dead cap hit that he's carrying right now. The Seahawks would have to absorb a $39 million dead cap hit. So I think the idea that any trade could happen right now seems very unrealistic. And if it did, the Bears would probably be at the bottom of the list because of what the Seahawks could get back. The Cowboys can throw Dak Prescott at him with a franchise tag so they could get their quarterback. They could get Derek Carr from the Raiders. Even the Saints, they've got some pieces. If you wanted to throw Taysom Hill in there, maybe Jameis Winston comes back. The Bears don't have a younger quarterback that you could at least use as a bridge guy. The Seahawks would not want to do that with Nick Foles, and they've got later draft picks to go with it. And so, in my opinion, it just, to me, the Bears, it'd be a great story for Chicago, and I know Bears fans would love to have him, but I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I just think as far as matchups are concerned, trying to put together a trade, it seems the least likely of those four teams.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what I come back to at the beginning is like the Bears feel like they're just happy to be here, happy to be on the list. Like, wow, you know, it's the same conversation they've had with, you know, Deshaun Watson and, you know, the Jets and the Dolphins and all the other teams that have young quarterbacks and better draft picks to offer. The Bears are not necessarily an enticing destination for the opposing general manager to want to trade with. It's, I guess their argument is more trying to sell the quarterback himself and then use that leverage to say, well, Russell Wilson wants to come to Chicago and doesn't want to go anywhere else, or wants to come here more than anywhere else, or Deshaun Watson or whichever. And then it's about, you know, how about, you know, Pete Carroll can have David Montgomery try and fix some of that running back issue. Maybe Cole Kmet can be that next young tight end. We'll throw in any of those recent draft picks. Jalen Johnson can be a young, high-quality starting cornerback to help that Seattle secondary. Maybe Roquan Smith, he's still on the tail end of his rookie deal. He's going to need a contract extension, but still, you know, and the next young Seahawks linebacker. And you start to piece together a handful of those young pieces, plus, you know, this year's first, next year's first, maybe another first after that, maybe another second after that. And you can start to get somewhere close to the compensation package minus the quarterback solution for Seattle.
Yeah, the quarterback situation would be a big part of any trade here. And maybe the Seahawks would be more willing to go the route of getting a young quarterback. But again, that 20th overall pick, I don't know that they'd be able to get the guy that they're necessarily looking for if they're wanting to be able to compete quickly in the NFC West. So we'll see how this ends up panning out. If this continues to be something that is speculated in the next over the next few weeks. If the Seahawks make a few moves, maybe this dies down a little bit. If they don't do what Russell Wilson wants, then maybe, just maybe, this trade chatter continues to escalate. And who knows, maybe the Chicago Bears end up throwing an offer John Schneider's way, and suddenly the Bears have the best quarterback they've had in franchise history. We'll just have to wait and see. Thanks for your input, Lauren. It's been a blast.
Hey, appreciate you having me on anytime.